Welcome to the C3 Church Global Podcast with Phil Pringle. Phil is the founder and senior leader of C3 Church Global, a family of over 500 churches around the world. We're passionate about bringing you fresh, inspiring devotionals to fuel your day and insightful conversations on all things church and leadership. And it all starts right now.
Well, here we are again on our C3 Church Global Podcast. Such a joy talking to so many fascinating, interesting people. And one of the most wonderful people I've met in my entire life is the wife of my good friend, Simon McIntyre, Valerie McIntyre. Great to have you with us, Val.
Oh my gosh, it's so good to be here, Pastor Phil.
Yeah, well,
very excited.
I don't know if I've ever met such a positive pastor as yourself.
Ooh, that's saying a lot. I love that.
Most pastors have got a lot, they feel like they've got a lot to complain about, but and that's not always true. But there are a lot of pressures. There are a lot of stresses with pastoring people, and you, alongside of Simon, have been pastoring so many people, and you've always managed to keep a very positive view of everything, even when things are going really bad. And your positive view is a mixture of not just being faith-filled, but also being gracious and giving people a lot of room to move in. How have you developed all that?
You know what? I actually thought a lot about that in the last few years. The reason I say that is I've tried to sort of get to the heart of, or even the origin of, what I believe is a strong streak of empathy. So I'm a fairly empathetic person, and part of it is just self-survival, right? Because I'm constantly looking at the world, at least I try to, through other people's eyes, or try to walk that mile in their shoes. It's critical for me to do my best to really try to understand where people are coming from. Everywhere, because it helps me make sense of the world around me. It stops me from reacting and overreacting to situations, and generally helps me be more peaceful. So it's a muscle that I have worked on for most of my life, and it's been awesome. It's really helped me.
Wonderful. So your story, I find it to be absolutely fascinating. And one of the greatest parts of that story is how long it was before you became a married woman and kept it all together, lived a beautiful life there in New York City. But tell us how, tell us a bit about that story, how old you were when you got married, what your experience was before you got married. And then we'll ask another question after that.
Okay, cool. Well, I came back to Christ in my early 30s. I was in New York for a few years. It was kind of a neat, kind of a really interesting, fun time for me. I was working for a PR agency on the Upper East Side that represented really famous fashion designers, and also worked with the socialites of the city. So it was an awesome way to just drop into New York City and get to learn about it from the inside out. But I wasn't following the Lord then. And within about 3 years, I kind of hit a rock bottom. I just felt like my world wasn't going anywhere. I was lonely. Too many details to get into. But thankfully, Jesus met me literally in my living room. I was listening to a tape by Kenneth Copeland that my mother sent me. I clearly wasn't in church. I happened to have a Bible there, and I picked up Hebrews 11. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And I had hit such a rock bottom financially. I wasn't well, etc. I thought, look, if I just throw my cares on him, if I trust him, put faith in him, to come alongside of me and just be my Lord, I've got to believe that, he will meet me there. And sure enough, my whole life changed after that moment. I started to tithe, if you can believe it, on unemployment, which was kind of crazy because, it's $300 a week in New York City doesn't get very far. 10% of that, $30, could buy me food for 5 days. So I just threw my cares onto him. I trusted him financially, and everything turned around for me in that year, and I never looked back. And one of the things that I determined to do was to, you know, to wait on him for my future, and that included a husband. And so, you know, my years of dating didn't land me where I wanted to be. And I just said, okay, Lord, I'm with you. And I made him, you know, my bestie, and, you know, just waited to see if, you know, he was going to deliver. While I was waiting, I was living, you know, I was running a business. I was working for people. I really interesting jobs. And I was, living my life. You know, I just got that revelation at 40. I'm not going to wait for a man to define me. One may never come along. I may never meet someone I'd like to be married to. So I just started playing golf and started painting and taking French. So by the time I met my husband, I had really been living in lockstep with Christ as my provider, both emotionally and on everything. And I had also allowed myself to explore my life and enjoy it. So it was very good for my soul, and it kept me in a really sound state of mind. So there you go.
That is fantastic. And then you, what age were you married at? Can I ask that?
Yeah, I think I was 45. Yeah, 45.
Okay, so that's 5 years from that you were a single, mature woman. And there would be a number of even younger people who find that very difficult to hold the line and to do exactly what you've just described, being devoted mm-hmm. to Jesus and exploring legitimate areas that, you know, you could expand your life in. Are there any keys that you could share that would help younger women who are really finding it very difficult to feel that there's company, that there's a future, that the frustration of just going home alone is never going to end? How do we get through that? How does a lady get through that?
That's a really good question. And I definitely had my moments of feeling really lonely, and there's moments of desperation, you know, like there are. I think, look, in the most simple terms, I had made a decision to follow Christ. And I knew that that didn't mean things were going to ever be really easy, but I knew they would be right. There was a sense of all is well deep in my soul. So when the tough times came, it flowed up and covered those moments. I always felt like Jesus had my back. See, this is where I get emotional and I could cry, but literally, like, there's such a grace. I think when we are denying ourselves and sacrificing what we want to do to follow him, and we're all in, you cannot tell me that he isn't right there. Now, we know Jesus is always with us, but the sense of his presence is so deep and rich. And I really feel like he just has that beautiful grace for those that are willing to sacrifice what they want to follow him. And I felt
fantastic.
It all the way. I felt it every bit
okay.
of the way.
So that means, you know, you've got to take the time to be in his presence, to pray and to draw near to God. He promises he will draw near to you. And that is an extremely fulfilling situation, because here's the strange thing, Val. We live in a world where it seems to me like half the world wants to get married, and the other half who are married seem to be trying to get unmarried. It's like, you know, it's like we can never quite get happy. And if we don't get happy with ourselves as a single person, we're going to be just as frustrated as a married person. So coming out of singleness at the age of 45, and then there's someone else in the house. I mean, you've got habits, you've got places, rhythms, you've got the way of doing life, you've got your level of independence. And suddenly, now, and I know Simon, he was previously married, so he was already used to the idea of sharing his house with somebody. Maybe, you could maybe, I don't know, all the ins and outs of your own marriage, but I'm just saying he at least had experienced marriage before. How was it for you coming into a marriage out of an independent lifestyle, very successful in the business world, managing some very powerful people and companies, and now there's a man in your house, and there's obviously things that are going to be different.
Oh, yeah. Especially marrying someone like Simon, because he's a strong man. He has very specific ideas. And yes, so it's funny, on our honeymoon, I remember having a moment of like, uh-oh, because we were playing pool and he was so good. And I just thought, you know what? He's just good at everything. And I'm just, oh, it was so, because now I have to share the spotlight in my own life, you know? And I'm like, And so, and then the first maybe year, there were moments I'd have these panic attacks and I'd literally go downstairs to like sleep on the couch, not angry, just like, I just felt so like trapped in my own life for 5 minutes. And poor Simon would come down the stairs. He goes, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Oh," and he's, "No, come back upstairs." So, he was so kind to me, during that period, because it was a huge shift for me to literally, like, I had been single all those years and doing my own thing, and I got my own strong personality. The other thing, too, is, as you mentioned, you know, Simon's first wife passed away from cancer really sadly, and I think, if I can say this, he almost waited until he was married and it was a safe space. And he started, you know, when we got married, he started going through a grieving process. It was pretty profound. So the first few years of our marriage were peppered by some, you know, intense emotional exchanges. It goes back to what I said earlier, though. God, I believe very strongly that he put us together. This is a marriage not of convenience. It's not of just because we love each other, we enjoy each other's company. It's because God put us together. And that runs through the center of our relationship. And that's what keeps us loving each other, laughing through some tough times, you know, and always getting back into lockstep. It's because of Jesus. And so I'm committed to that, and he is. And it makes all the difference in the world. I cannot imagine being married to someone who doesn't share my faith. Can't imagine it.
So good. That is fantastic, Val. And I am personally so very thankful to God that you and Simon found each other, because you've been an invaluable part of our team, C3 Global team around the world. And there are so many women and wives, you know, women single or married, who speak so highly of you and your input, your care into their lives. So I just feel like God has not just blessed Simon, but he's blessed C3 Global and our team by bringing you on board. And he saw a potential in you and was getting you ready out there in that marketplace for leadership in our whole movement. So thank you, Lord, for Val, and thank you, Val, for being such a valuable part of all that we do. So I hear there's a book in the making.
In my book, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, I wrote a manuscript. It's not a book yet. Over 300 pages. It's for middle grade children, 8 to 13. Probably skews more toward girls. Open to all. And it's part of a 3-book series that I have yet to write. I started book 2 already. I recently was really blessed by getting an incredible agent who's based in New York City, and he's just amazing. He's really into it. So I'm in a bit of a rewrite or writing is rewriting, by the way, and as you well know. And yeah, and so we'll take it out to some agents, some publishers, hopefully after that. But in the meantime, I created an immersive experience around the book so that someone could read the book in a digital space, and imagery would come up as you read, and music, you could opt into hearing music done by the one and only Jess Henderson. And in doing that, I got kind of excited about that. And so it looks like I'm on a journey to possibly starting a company that creates immersive books. So I'm kind of writing and excited about that. And I've got some ideas around this new business idea. So anyway,
I love that. I love that idea. That is amazing.
Pretty awesome.
So sign me up. I'm in.
I will. You should have immersive books. The next book you write should be immersive.
Immersive books? Yeah, call it immersive books. My God, books with a baptism. That is
totally.
That is going to be fantastic. Okay, so Val, here's another question about transition, not about marriage, from singleness to being married, but actually you and Simon led a church in London, a C3 church, mm-hmm. one of our churches in London, for 11 years, I think. Was it around 11 years? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it came time to move on. And now, between Simon and yourself, you are overseeing our American region. Mm. Well, in terms of transitioning out of pastoring a church, leading a church, tell us that journey.
You know, I think it would be different for me than it might be for others. I often say I was put into the deep end when I married Simon, because immediately I was then, made pastor of a church in London, and we were both overseeing Europe. I was blessed and privileged to be added to the executive team. For me, it felt like I was a steward for 10 years of an exceptional experience. You live and you bleed for your people. You're there to do your very best to share God's love and to help people grow. Discipleship is obviously a core part of who we are as a movement. But here's the thing, your identity, It's not unusual for your identity to be connected to the things that you do, clearly. But as hard as it may seem for those that are running churches, your identity is in Christ. It's not in your church. And the church is God's. You know what I'm saying? So it's normal to be so connected to it that you feel like it's yours, but it's actually not yours. And so for me, I just kept my eye on the prize. It was like, I'm here to serve God, do His will, love His people, and usher in the next person that's going to do this for this community. It's not mine, it's God's. So if you think about it like that, it's less about you and it's more about the kingdom. A little tiny something. And I've encountered that here in America. We just chatted about this in a meeting we did in LA. I belong to the kingdom of God. My home is in heaven. And I know that may sound a little trite, but that's how I actually live my life. Like, everything I'm doing here is pointing me toward there. And so I'm a citizen of heaven, and I'm passing through here, and I'm going to do my best while I'm here. And I always keep that in mind just around anything. This isn't mine. These aren't my things. And I have a place I'm heading to. So I do my best with what I've got here.
Yeah. So moving on from the church isn't hard when you've got that concept firmly in place, because you're holding everything quite loosely. And God's always got a very exciting plan ahead for us. So, we're leaving one thing to enter into the next. I just want to jump into a totally different area for the remainder of this. A couple areas. The first one is you've helped us with our communications area in C3 Global for a number of years. You were heading all that up and did a brilliant job, and very sad when you moved on. But, you know, obviously there are other people who are able to move in and you've got another role. But in terms of helping churches with their communications, whether it's social media, blogs, internet, internal communications, external communications, obviously communication is extremely important. And today, ordinary communications can get buried, drowned out in the massive overload of information and communications that is out there. And so managing our communications into the community and into both inside and outside the church, I think is a really important part of our lives. I was recently in a church and I really was impressed with their simplicity and sparseness of communications. And I thought they have been so clever because they've decluttered their entire communications, which was a reflection of decluttering their philosophy and decluttering their event calendar and their structures. And so the church was just being run quite simply, and everybody could easily understand what was happening. And I think that sometimes because of an overload of communication, people give up after the third announcement of anything different. But if there's just a couple things that are being said, that we're just doing this one thing and then that's it, people. It's easy for everybody to actually assimilate that. And I think part of the ability to cut through all the chatter is to actually have simplicity. And so guide us on some of this, Val. What's your experience with comms?
I think that's really interesting. Now I'm super curious who you're talking about. But communication is really just a vehicle. So what you're doing is you're sharing information. And the most effective communication is going to be the most authentic. So whatever you're doing, it has to be authentic to the, you know, to the place of origin. So depending on the your community, your communication is going to change depending on the community. There's also a different, you know, style of communications. There's the user-generated communications that certain brands do, where they really champion, for instance, their community through UGC that they put out there. But then there's the very overtly controlled and cultivated communication that is very thoughtful. So communication is always going to be critical. I think we're in an era right now where it can be tricky because people are actually, asking. For the world I operate in, and with brands, they're asking brands to say what they stand for, and they're really looking at brands that feel inauthentic, a bit side-eyed, like askance. So I think, again, for me, it's all about authenticity. You have to be true to who you are. You have to be able to communicate in a way that helps share that, so that it's easy for someone to understand who you are, what makes you tick, what they can expect. It's good branding, really. It's like, how can, what can I expect every time I come up next to you, for instance. So for just using a personal example. So I've been doing this thing lately where people come to me for advice around business all the time. So I thought, I'll intentionalize it. I'm not charging for it. I'll throw out some advice based on some universal principles that I use. I'm here if somebody wants to do a one-on-one. Okay, so if you go to my feed, there's me talking about something, and then there might be a reel with cute animals, because that's me. I spend so much time looking at really cute animal videos, right? So it's somebody else that would be silly. Like, but for me, it's like people who know me know how much I love animals. So it's normal for me to have like a, you know, a video up about, this is a good business practice. Oh, look at this cute squirrel. It's authentic to me. It makes sense for me, right? Not for others. So as long as you're being true to yourself and you're being authentic, whether you're an organization or a person or whatever else, your communications will ring true. And that's what people are looking for.
Absolutely. In any age, you know, it's interesting, Val. Just yesterday, I did a little Bible study on uniqueness. Because I was thinking about Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
And I thought, I wonder who would have signed him today if they'd heard a guy who hardly can sing. It's like he's talking and nasally and, you know, just... And then Van Morrison. Who would have... You know, Brown Eyed Girl, I know he did that, but it seems like this rugged old voice that's crackly and just wanders all over the place, but they're completely unique. They're just being who they are. And they weren't trying to be like ABBA, or they weren't trying to be like Frank Sinatra or anybody else. They were just being themselves, and that was actually enough. And it took me to thinking about David when he was gonna face off with Goliath. And his king, Saul, said, here, use my armor. Because in his thinking, every soldier goes to war with armor on. David, out of courtesy, put on the sword, but obviously it was too big for him because Saul was a very tall guy. And so he's dragging this armor and he says, this isn't going to work. I need to go not in another person's armor. I need to go as I am. And I think for pastors and their messages and their culture in their church, it has to be true to them, not just something they picked up elsewhere at a conference. There needs to be exactly like you're saying, and the cry for authenticity in a cynical age is really high because people have been sold stuff that didn't add up. And I think we need to de-stylize sometimes. Sometimes I think people have thought excellence, or people even, you know, would call excellence inauthentic, because when you've put all the lipstick on and the cosmetics on a video, it's looking too slick. And I think maybe just a more raw presentation is actually going to be more believable. Anyway, moving on from the subject of authenticity, I know we've bounced around a wide range here. I want to go to yet another, and we got Father's Day coming up, and what do you think men need to hear today from wives, or what? How do you think men can do better at in terms of leading home and in terms of being fathers, from your observation?
I think, and this could not just be my observation, but my experience, quality time is probably the best thing that a man can do to love on his family and to show his children particularly that he cares. Children crave their father's attention, and fathers can be very distracted. You know, before women went back to work, he was like the sole breadwinner, generally speaking. The world isn't easy on men, I don't think, especially right now. And so they're out fighting the good fight. They're distracted. All host of reasons why they might not have that time that their family really needs. So I remember when I first got married with Simon, we would have these like weekends, we would go away and just hang out and watch movies. And it was that quality time that really put us together, really helped us bond. And I think with kids, they just can't wait to see their dad walk through that door and just give him a hug and ask how their day went. So quality time for me would be the most important thing you can do. for any child.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I think, I want to help and encourage dads and husbands as much as I can, because as you said, sometimes the world isn't so kind on the guys these days, and whatever we can do to encourage, strengthen, and help guys get through their days where they're lonely and anxious and angry or depressed. I know that, unfortunately, figures of self-harm are way higher amongst men than ladies. And I just think we're in a time when we really need to reach out as the church and strengthen men and encourage them, help them through it all. Well, Val, it's been such a joy talking to you and hearing from you. Looking forward to the future. And hopefully we'll catch up soon. I think we are at our next conference in Hawaii.
Yeah, can't wait. Excited. Yay.
Look forward to that. Val, before I go, you mentioned your feed before. Where can people find you?
Val. Instagram, valerie.d.mcintyre.
Okay, at valerie.d.mcintyre.
Yeah, or you can find me in my Valerie Donati, DONATI.com. I have a website where I do all my business stuff, and I have my story there. So it's like all the phases of my life. So if you're at all curious, people were like, just gotta write it down. So I did. So there's a whole website there with info. Yeah.
Okay, Val, thanks so much.
All right.
God bless you,
everybody. Take care.
Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the C3 Church Global Podcast. Let us know what you thought by leaving a review and connect with us on Instagram at C3 Church Global. We hope you'll be back real soon.